Hi, book lovers and Bake Shield Farn. Jasmine here today, and today our guest has wrote an amazing book that I actually really love. So let's welcome Marlane Wagman Geller. Hi!
Thank you, Farah, for that nice introduction. I appreciate it.
Yes, we're so happy to have you, and we're so happy to just introduce so many of our One Book Project authors here to our community. Like, I feel so connected to this year's One Book Project with our library. Just to give our audience a little bit of background, if they haven't gotten involved in the One Book Project before, but the One Book Project is actually a community-wide read. This is, we're almost through 2 decades of doing a community-wide read in Bakersfield and Kern County. And one of the things that we've done over the years is, instead of just focusing on one book, we choose one book that gives us the themes of the year, and then we expand beyond that to make sure that we are encapsulating all the various age groups, all the various types of genre readers, so that everybody can get involved at whatever level that they want to get involved in. And so as time has gone on, we have our main book and then all those companion titles. And this year, particularly, is all about women because it's the centennial celebration of the 19th Amendment, so women's right to vote. I think it's so cool how many, like, theme tie-ins we have this year, because we have female empowerment, we have women in STEM, we have the fact that it's an election year. Like, it's just so exciting to see how the themes of this year are localized. And one of the things that is even cooler about this year is that we have had the opportunity to meet so many of the authors of this year's One Book title. And it is honestly, in my opinion, life-changing to learn how the authors get to that finished product. And I feel like such a more personal experience with the book. I don't know about you, Farah, if you feel that way.
Oh, for sure. Like, I tell you this all the time, but whenever I read something and then I talk to an author, like, I'm totally fangirling the whole way through, because it's so empowering. It's so inspiring. And, like, never had I ever thought, Jasmine, that I would be where I'm at today, like, talking to authors of books that I've read. So it's definitely, like, thrilling in its, like, own sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So Marlene's book, Women Who Launch, I learned a lot in your book, Marlene. I was like, you're going, oh my goodness. I didn't know that. That was like my whole experience of reading this book.
Well, the fun thing about doing the research, when you write, you learn as much as your reader does, because, you know, you start off with the woman, and then you've it's sort of like being an archaeologist. You just keep digging, and as you dig, you find out more very surprising tidbits. So it makes the research fun.
Absolutely, absolutely. You must have felt really connected with the, because they're not characters, obviously, they're real women. So, like, you must have felt really connected with these women, just to, like, figure out their lives and figure out, you know, just looking at their contributions, you know?
Absolutely. And I think one of the common denominators in all the chapters is the woman left their mark, but yet their own individual story was obliterated by time. So that was sort of the premise of the book. They became forgotten footnotes, yet their iconoclastic contribution became obscured. So those were the women I was kind of concentrating on.
Yeah.
To posthumously bring them to light.
I like that. How did you get to that, like, premise when you started researching and writing?
Well, in the 1950s, the premise was women who lunched. And it was like, you know, because women back then in the 1950s, their lives were so circumscribed, they could not open a bank account without their husband's permission. They couldn't have most jobs. So what did they do? They lunched. So just to show, but some of these women sort of overcame that paradigm. And that's how I got the name Woman Who Launched, is sort of like a takeover from the woman who lunched. So while most of the 50s women, they just had idle lives because that's all they could really do given their, you know, their time period. Some of these women who did live before then, they still managed to break through the gender ceiling. And those were kind of the women that I wanted to concentrate on.
That's really interesting, that kind of wordplay and that evolution of how, like, the original premise and how it turned into that, especially with the title of the book. That's really cool. Was there any of the women in the book that you were particularly like really excited about? Like which one was your favorite?
Well, a good mother loves all her children. So, one that I really liked was like one sample chapter was Sarah Josepha Hale. So she's an example. We all know Mary had a little lamb, mm-hmm. and we all know the American tradition of Thanksgiving. But what was forgotten that both those iconoclastic enterprises both stem from Sarah Josepha Hale. And so to me, that was really interesting that one 18th century woman, she could have written the most famous nursery rhyme and, next to Christmas, the second most major American holiday. But how did she go from, you know, where she was to what she accomplished? That was the chapter. So in order to really merit inclusion in the book, number one, you had to be sort of unknown. You mm-hmm. had to have a lasting contribution. But second of all, your life had to be interesting, because if it wasn't interesting, there's no chapter.
That makes a lot of sense. So
they had to meet those three characteristics for mm-hmm. inclusion. But that's the one. I really like the Sarah jokes. Josepha Hale. And then I learned a lot of things too, because for example, Mary had a little lamb. I was not aware it was a religious treatise. So Mary was the mother of God and the lamb was Jesus, because she was writing for, it was sort of a religious primer for children. I just thought it was a cute little rhyme about a lamb. I did not realize, you know, its fleece is white as snow was a biblical allusion. And then that, if that wasn't enough of a contribution, okay, then you had to start my Thanksgiving. So, mm-hmm. and then as another, you mentioned you unearthed a little fact. So when Thomas Edison, he created the phonograph, for some reason, which I don't know, the first word he recorded was Mary had a little lamb. So her nursery rhyme were the first recorded words, human recorded words. So I love trivia and I love women's history. And it was sort of an amalgam of both.
That's really interesting. It kind of mm-hmm. was like that when I was yeah. listening to the book. I felt like I was unearthing facts that I felt like to some degree I should have known. But I mean, like you said, the women are eclipsed by time. I mean, that was the whole premise was to...
That was, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, they were premised. And so that's exactly it. They were just eclipsed because, you know, the women were in the behind the great men. So, mm-hmm. you know, they don't like to give credit sometimes.
Exactly. Did you have any favorites, Farah?
I didn't have any favorites because they were all like inspirational, but I have a few that stand out. So I really enjoyed Estee Lauder's story. And then I really enjoyed Jenny Craig's story for some reason. I never really thought like, okay. But the funniest story that I, this is a story about the story. So I believe, and I can't remember her name, but it was Estee Lauder's daughter-in-law?
It was her daughter-in-law, Evelyn Lauder.
Okay, so I was listening to that one, and you know how it talks about the pink ribbon and stuff? Okay, so I was listening to that, and all of a sudden I'm like driving, and then I go on Truxton, which is one of the main streets to get to the library, and they have pink, as she's talking about pink ribbons, it's got pink ribbons all down on all the trees, and I was like, well, this is weird.
that's coincidental.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, the thing is, we all know, we all know the pink ribbon, but mm-hmm. the genesis of that was forgotten. And of course, Evelyn Lauder, she herself had breast cancer. And so she wanted to do something to further research. So her mother-in-law was Estee Lauder. So she went to the counters and she gave out pink ribbon. I don't remember why she made that associated. I guess pink is mm-hmm. traditional feminine color. And so she started handing them out at the Estee Lauder counters. And that's how it became a symbol of breast cancer awareness. And now it's ubiquitous. I mean, just from starting from that department store counter. And then I also found Estee Lauder a very interesting story, because here's a woman, she started above her father's hardware store in Queens, and then she became so powerful that her son, she left such an empire that the painting, The Woman of Gold, her son bought that because Estee Lauder was Hungarian background and the woman in gold was on Hungarian painting. And I think her son-in-law, it was a few $100 million, but because of Estee Lauder's wealth, he was able to purchase the woman in gold. That's mm-hmm. how the lady who started above the hardware store in Queens, how successful she was. So, mm-hmm. I mean, what tenacity and what a great story.
I even liked the one about, and I can't remember her name, but the lady who invented the Spanx.
Oh, her. Oh, yeah, Sarah Blakely. Yeah. That kills me because, yeah. So she, she went to a party and she was really writing tight pants. And she said, I don't want to announce to the world whether, you know, my belly button's an innie or an outie. And then she just got the idea, well, you know, to do Spanx. And, mm-hmm. And then she made it to Forbes, billionaires under 40. And mm-hmm. just because of that eureka moment to make Spanx. So, but she had so much, you understand chutzpah? Do you understand chutzpah?
Yes.
Okay, good. Now you know my Jewish word for the day. But she had so much chutzpah that when she was trying to promote her Spanx, she went to Neiman Marcus, and this lady said, we're not interested. She said to the manager, please, just go to the dressing room. And she actually went to the dressing room with the woman, and she said, just try on my garment, just try it. And the woman liked it so much that she contacted Oprah, and then the rest was, as they say, history. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think that's another common denominator. These women all had such chutzpah. They all just said, we're not listening to the naysayers. Because so many times, because for the Spanx lady, everybody said, oh, it was such a great idea, would have been done before. Well, you know, you're going to lose your shirt if you're investing. But, you know, if you listen to the naysayers, you end up nowheres.
Yeah.
You just have to... Yeah, you know, because the only failing is not in the trying. And I think these women, they all had the tenacity and the perseverance and the persistence.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt like that theme along the way, because not everybody in the book necessarily had like a really happy life. You know, it's not like, mm-hmm. and their success wasn't always on them. My personal favorite was the woman who technically invented the game of Monopoly.
Oh yeah. I thought about you, Jasmine, when I read that one. I was like, oh, Jasmine's going to be so mad.
That was an example of a man taking a woman's idea, calling it his own, and Parker Brothers sponsored it because it was so much more reputable to have a man be the inventor. Mm-hmm. And when Charles Darrell, he took Elizabeth Magpie's idea and he invented Monopoly. And one trivia I found is all the places on the board game, he was from Atlantic City, New Jersey. So all the places on the board game, all from Atlantic City. But what I found so interesting about that chapter, Elizabeth was, she was very religious, and she wrote, I mean, she created her version of the game, the prototype of Monopoly was anti-capitalism. But when Charles got a hold of it, he made it the ultimate capitalist game. So he ran with her idea, but he changed its premise. It was interesting because Monopoly is the most famous board game in the world. And there's been, you know, every city has a Monopoly game. Mm-hmm. And I even saw once a Ghettoopoly, which was, you know, I told my students about Ghettoopoly. Go, oh, where do I buy it? Of course, they would say that. But, you know, it's such an iconoclastic game. But it came from this little Puritan woman trying to show the evils of capitalism. Mm-hmm. And her idea was completely circumvented. Plus, a man and Parker brother gave him credit. So I like that chapter.
Interesting, because I actually, so the reason Farrah was excited was because I'm an avid board game collector.
Oh.
Like, I own over 100 board games, and
wow.
I was listening to that chapter. It's so funny because I have like, I don't know, I have like 5 copies of Monopoly, something like that. But I have, two of the things I have is one, I have a vintage copy. So I have a copy from the 60s. And it's not called Monopoly. It's called like Finance. It was like some segue, and it's a little more interesting because it has like stocks in it, which the actual Monopoly right now doesn't have. But the other thing I have is I have a game called Anti-Monopoly, and it talks about the, like, basically you have monopolists and then you have, I forget what the other one's called. I forget what the second one's called, but it doesn't matter. It's pretty much saying, here's all the restrictions you have because you're a monopolist. And then here's all the restrictions you have because you're not a monopolist. And the monopolist has like more potential to make more money, but they also have a lot more restrictions because obviously we don't want straight up monopolies. So it was just interesting because I'm like listening to this book, I'm listening to your book, and I'm thinking about anti, that was her goal. And I have a game that kind of slightly is up like the essence of that original idea. So I just thought that was super interesting. It made me chuckle and laugh, and I enjoyed it.
Right. Yeah, because it was the same idea, like very anti-monopolistic, not the ultimate capitalist game. So I like that story a lot. Plus, she was a real character, too.
Oh,
absolutely a character.
A lot of the women had a lot of conviction. You know, they had very firm ideas of what they felt was right. And you could tell that, you know, people around them did not like what they always felt, you know?
I think that's true. Like they really maintained the courage of their conviction. And I also like, they just had such storied lives. They all had such interesting lives.
Yeah. I also enjoyed the Coco Chanel one. It was interesting. I had no idea. Like, I got a little like upset when I had found that out about her interaction with German officers.
My husband
is Jewish, so obviously I think about that a lot whenever it comes up in history. And so I was just really thrown by that because it's just not necessarily what I've ever heard when it comes to a part of her legacy. So I appreciate that you went through the positives and the negatives.
Because that's why you understood chutzpah, of course. But you know, the thing with Coco Chanel, because we all know, you know, she was the queen of fashion and she was the first woman to head her own couturier company. But I think what the Chanel wants to sort of camouflage is the fact that she had Nazi affiliations. And you know, she grew up in an orphanage. And when the Nazis occupied France, she wasn't going to go back. She wasn't giving up her apartment at the Ritz. So she became the lover of a German officer because she said, I'm just not going to lose my wealth. But what really bothered me is when she, because Chanel was owned by two Jewish brothers, and she, because under France, under the occupation, Jews couldn't own things. So she basically stole it from them. And so that was so anti-Semitic and it was so opportunist. But currently Chanel, the two brothers did buy back Chanel, and their descendants who live in the United States are one of the wealthiest people. They very, very low profile, but the two Jewish brothers' descendants still own Chanel.
Wow, that's amazing.
Right, even though it's still in Paris, the two brothers bought it back. So yeah, and then five was just because she had a superstitious attachment to the number five. So I mean, I think what it learned that great people can have great flaws. Yeah, she was innovative designer. Yes, she went from an orphanage to the pinnacle of the hierarchy of French fashion, but at the end, it doesn't really matter. You know, she was a product of her times and the accomplishments have to stand on their own. Like, do we denigrate the pyramids because it was built on the slave labor? I mean, sometimes the thing has to stand unto the artist and the artist's life are a thing apart, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think it's definitely one of those really in-depth philosophical conversations of whether or not they can versus, you know, like you said, whether or not they can stand apart. I was really curious, what was it like, you know, researching all of these women? Like, how did that process go? What are some, like, maybe some memories that you had while during the process? I'm just kind of interested because this is so much information and there was so much unearthed facts, like I said. Mm-hmm. So,
well, what I tried to do is first I had to think of the woman who did launch something that became an icon. Then the second thing is, they couldn't be well known, because that would be, why read about something you already know? Mm-hmm. So once I had the icon and the person who did it, then I just started researching it. And if I found an unsurprising, a surprising fact, then I made sure I included it in the book, because if I didn't know about it, I felt the readers would want to know about it as well. And the you know, and while Marilyn might have diamonds as her best friend to an author of nonfiction books, you know, the internet is their best friend. I mean, sometimes I'd have to go to primary sources, but I always did start with an internet research, and sometimes based on the books that were available out there. So I had to be interested in the topic, because you know, it's so copious to do the research, but if it was on a topic I liked, then it was a labor of love. It was never onerous.
Absolutely. When you're enjoying it, it's worth it.
Exactly. So yeah, I loved learning about the Girl Scouts. So that would be another one. I'm from Canada.
That was a good one.
And in Canada, we have the Girl Guides. But the Girl Guides, the American version is more feminist. I think the Scout has a stronger connotation. A guide is like we're guiding men. But nevertheless, in Canada, we have the Girl Scouts. But the woman who did it, Juliet Gordon Lau, she was fascinating because, well, she did it because there was the Boy Scouts, and you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And but then you learned about you know, her life was very, very interesting, and she was partially deaf, and when she asked for donations for the Girl Scouts and people said no, she was what I can't hear you, she wouldn't hear no for an answer. And I found it so touching when she died. She was buried in the Girl Scouts uniform, mm-hmm. and her troop put to the greatest scout of them all and slipped it into the pocket. So I found that very, very touching.
That is touching.
Yeah, that was a good chapter.
It was, absolutely. I would love to also hear how you went, how I'm assuming your publisher helped coordinate the cover of the book, because I love the cover. When I saw the cover, I was like, this book is awesome.
Well, you know what? It was interesting because I really liked the cover. The publisher does design the cover, and I loved it because the rocket ship encompassed launching, and it showed sort of 1950s women, which a lot of them were. But, you know, and a lot of people did write me to say, you know, we love the cover. But, you know, sometimes people just crawl out of the woodwork. And I remember one woman wrote, she goes, I'm really offended by your sexual cover. It looks like a giant phallus with women on it. And she goes, you know, and this is, you know, I was going to buy it for my daughter, and, you know, it's so sexualized. And I go, oh, maybe I'm getting old because I didn't even notice it was sexual.
Yeah.
So, you just never know. It's like the old Lincoln thing. You can please some of the time, not all the people all the time, because I thought they did a great job. But I remember that one woman was so irate with me, and I go, well, sorry, you know, I that's just what they came up with. But I do love the cover.
If it makes you feel better, I didn't see that at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at the cover right now.
I didn't see it all. And she goes, well, this is sort of targeting teenage girls or young women. And I go, oh, I didn't see it. You know, it's, you know, whatever. Maybe it was more her than me. How about that? It was probably just her.
Well, yeah, that's how it is. With covers, sometimes people's interpretations. I mean, not everybody likes every cover that's out there. And I mean, the reality is I think with the like original premise, especially because it was supposed to be, you know, lunch, it's cool that it's women from like the 50s, and then the launch factor, I think it's perfect. Yeah.
I loved it. I thought they did a great job. I thought the publisher did a very, very good job. I liked it.
That's really cool. Yeah, I really liked it too. And I think that this was just a wonderful series of just exploring, you know. Like you said, a lot of times, if you've heard it before, you don't necessarily want to read it again. And I felt like there was such a good amount of people that I knew nothing about. And even if I did know something about them, I certainly did not know that much about their lives. So it was really fun.
Right. It's like even with, you know, Statue of Liberty. Okay. So on the base of the statue, we all know the poem, well, you know, give me your tired, your poor, your tempest-tossed yearning to be free. But what I didn't, you know, what we, most people don't know, it was a Jewish woman with Russian descent who wrote that sonnet. And what was interesting, when Joseph Pulitzer, he had made a contest. Because of course the French gave the Americans the statue, but it was up to the Americans to make the pillar. So to raise money, Pulitzer had the contest for the sonnet, and Mark Twain and some of the greatest writers of the time. But this unknown Jewish woman, she wrote that, and it's on the base of the Statue of Liberty. And in a way, we should all know that great sonnet on the. But most people, you say the poem, sonnet, base, what? And, you know, it's, and I love the way she said, like, she made the allusion to the Colossus. It's a beautiful sonnet.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's just those little moments. Those little moments were just really a lot of fun. I'm sure Farah also listened to the audiobook version. I'm assuming you did, Farah.
Yeah.
I did too. I really liked the voice on the audiobook. It was very enjoyable.
I felt like the narrator, I'm trying to pull up her name, but I feel like the narrator gave like each person like really good, like a really good like lift. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Let me see who the narrator.
And very readable on fast pace, because me and Farah also fast forward our.
Yeah. her name is Susan Erickson. Erickson. Yeah. I really enjoyed her voice. I would probably read or listen to something else that she narrated. So the thing Jasmine and I do is we listen to books at a higher speed. I got Jasmine kind of hooked on it, because for me it's like harder to concentrate when they're at like normal speed. So I listen to them at higher speed, so it's easier for me to comprehend what the book is saying. And so even with the higher speed, I was able to like comprehend everything and understand like what was going on, versus some of the ones that I do, it's like hard and I'm just like, wait, I don't understand.
It was very easy to listen to and very enjoyable. And I've always said that I'm not a big nonfiction listener, but I found that your book was very easy to listen to and very easy to get into. And just that the little, you know, I always have a little bit of an anticipation when I'm reading nonfiction, because I know I'm not a nonfiction reader, which then, you know, puts up a whole mental block that has nothing to do with a book. But I found that I was so intrigued by some of these facts, and they were very like moments where I was like, this is some great trivia. I'm going to keep this locked in my head and share this with somebody.
I felt the same way. But I was telling Marlene that, like, when I was emailing her, that I really enjoyed the book so much that I am like picking up all of her other books as well. Some of them are on Hoopla, which is really nice. And that's kind of where we get our ebooks and audiobooks through the library. But I did pick up one that wasn't on there. I picked up a physical copy of it, and I'm really excited to read it.
Thank you for your solidarity. Thank you.
Jasmine, it is called And the Rest is History, The Famous and Infamous First Meetings of the World's Most Passionate Couples.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
My first book might be interesting to you because you're both librarians. It was called Once Again to Zelda, and it was the story behind literature's most intriguing dedications. That was the very first book, and that sort of launched my writing career. And the premise of that first book, and of course, you get the allusion to Once Again to Zelda because that was the Fitzgerald. But what I did is, just through happenstance, I started reading Peyton Place. And then just the book opened up to George for all the reasons he knows so well. And then I thought, with the Yenta in me said, well, who's George? And what were the reasons he knew so well? So I started looking up who was George. And why in her book did she say, and he was the put upon husband of Grace Metalius. And then I thought, well, that would be an interesting book with the famous classic novels of history. When the great writers were writing their books, who did they dedicate it to? And sometimes the story between the author and the person who they dedicated it to was as intriguing as the chapters of the book. And that was my first book, Once Again to Zelda. I called it Once Again to Zelda because that was the dedication to the great Gatsby, to the wife who he both loved and who destroyed him. And I just went through like Moby Dick or The Scarlet Letter, The Great Gatsby, just the classic books of history, and Rand, The Fountainhead. And it was just really, really interesting stories. But that would be like the trivia that was like really, to me, very, very interesting, because it was illuminating. It showed you, because in the dedication, that's when the author enters the confessional. So much more so than in the pages, the book. So you really learned a lot. And that was how I started actually writing. And that was in 2008. Mm-hmm. And back to not listening to the naysayers, because I remember I told my husband and I said, oh, you know, I got an idea to write a book on dedications. And he said, well, don't quit your day job. And I said, no, well, I'm not quitting my day job. I'm just going to send this out. And he goes, well, if you want to waste your time, it's your time to waste. And one of my great moments in my life was when I got a check from Penguin Publishing. And I showed my husband, oh, Gino Penguin, and his jaw hit the floor. But the point, and I still have the day job, but that's another thing. But the thing of it is, you don't, if I had listened, yeah, you're right, I'm this nobody from nowhere, I have no connections, I'm a teacher and by the, you know, Tijuana border, nobody's gonna, you know, listen to, you know, want to read anything I wrote, then I wouldn't have had the chance. And I must say my books are, for me, they've been the gift that keeps on giving. Nothing's brought me more joy than them. So that says you don't listen to the naysayers, because at least try, because at the end of your life, you know, well, I gave it my damnedest.
Oh, that's such a lovely story. That is so wonderful. Mm-hmm. It really is. And I feel like I felt that through your book. And I wonder if those experiences of yours that kind of led up to that, you know, this compendium of women who did the same thing, that tried their hardest to do what they loved. Because really, at the end of the day, when you put your all into things, even if they don't, you know, turn into something beautiful in that moment, a lot of times there's so many things in people's life, so many inventions, so many amazing accomplishments that did not become impactful until beyond somebody's life. Mm-hmm. Or they made an impact on somebody else who was able to take that forward and then take from it. And I think
exactly
that's meaningful.
Exactly. So. Like I tell my students, dreams don't just have to be for sleeping. You know, you just fight for it and you just try, and who knows? Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So you kind of got into like, isn't it called like micro histories when you're looking into these weird little like things like that? Mm-hmm. That's really cool. Micro histories. I get hung up over little things like that too. So it's just a lot of fun. I'm going to actually totally check out your first book. I think it's totally up my alley. I'm really interested. Yeah.
So. Well, if you're a book nerd, it gives you sort of the backstory, yeah, between the great classics. But sometimes the great classic, when you read about the author, it shows warts and all. But then again, what I was saying before, we have to judge the art independent of the artist. Or half the things in literature, like, you know, Picasso, he vivisected the woman on his canvas and in his life, but the paintings are still, you know, great art. Mm-hmm.
Well, realistically, people that tend to create art always tend to have a lot of, you know, they have a lot of monsters in their closets. I mean, that's a part of what contributes to that experience and the ability to emote, you know, whether it be through writing or painting or whatever the way, you know, I mean, if art needs human emotion, and emotion is built on those types of things. So like, I mean, it is like you said, you have to kind of like judge it separately, but then also know that they were affected by these things and be able to learn about that, because you also kind of have the flip side sometimes when you don't know the history behind the person, you just go and you put them up on a pedestal and you're like, look at the contributions they made. Well, yeah, but you also want to know about that person. So it's kind of like the, you know, balance type of thing going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Because like if you like, easy lives don't make for great stories, or
no.
Simple people, they might be nice to know, but they're not nice to write about, because mm-hmm. it's the angst that makes the art. Exactly. Angst makes art. Let's just say it like that.
Oh yeah. Angst makes a great story.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Where me and Farah are YA readers. I mean, I read YA books for the angst. So I definitely.
angst is where it's at. Absolutely. Absolutely.
We should totally share what we're reading, watching, and listening to. I'm very excited to hear what you are reading, watching, mm-hmm. and listening to, Marlene. I am super excited.
Well, watching, I don't do, because one of the things, because I do teach full time and then I write, so in order to do both back to back, you know, to get something you have to give something up. Mm-hmm. So I no longer, for almost a decade, I've never watched TV.
Oh, wow.
Or seen a movie or go out for lunch with friends. I used to do those things, but if you're gonna have work all day teaching and then you switch hats and you have deadlines, so basically you know, but it's a decision you have to make. So I don't like do those things like watch TV or have friends or things like that anymore. However, I do treat myself. So before I go to sleep, I allow myself an hour to read. So I still do read. And Farrah and I were talking. I just finished the book of Lost Names. And I really enjoyed that because it's how a modern day woman, she sees a photograph in a newspaper and of a book in a library. And then she starts trembling because she compiled that book. And then it goes back in time and she was in France during the occupation. And those were the names of the children that she had secreted away. And it was a love story and it was a historical story. And it was very, very, it was just a wonderful read.
That sounds like a really interesting book. It sounds very heartfelt and just, it sounds interesting. I wrote down the title. I like the title of it quite a bit. So I have to say your dedication to skipping out on television is very impressive. And I think it's very important to note that, I mean, that's what it takes when you, like you said, you have a day job. You know, that's what it takes to dedicate your time to your
right. hobby. Because like if you, you know, if you don't work, then you have all the time in the world. Or I knew this lady and she wrote children's books and she had four children. But when they went to school, she had all that 8 hours a day. So then you can have an outside life if you don't have a full-time job. But if you're going to have both, you just have to give something up because there's just not time to do both. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't regret it. If I had to do it again, I'd do the same.
Well, you said that it's been one of your greatest joys. So to some degree, it's become, I'm assuming, you know, your relaxation point is that passion. And I think that that's really important is that, you know, sometimes relaxation, hobbies, whatever you're focusing on, it's not always the obvious ticked off boxes, not necessarily watching TV or anything like that. You know, it just depends on what you want to pour your heart into. And so if you enjoy that.
Exactly. It's whatever it does. And then when I find with writing, that's the one thing that engrosses all my attention. So no matter what problems I'm having in my life, when I start researching it, it takes me away. And that's the whole purpose of art and hobbies, to get you out of your, you know, to give you a break from whatever is going on in your reality. So it is like my hobby. I don't look at it as work, but then again, that's why I don't watch TV or movies, but I do read at night for an hour.
Do you have any other major recommendations for our audience?
In terms of books?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I read The Peacock Summer. And that was a wonderful, wonderful read too. And it's about a woman, she's nearing 100 years old and she's looking back at her life. And it just is such a wonderful, wonderful story. It takes place in Britain. And I love The Peacock Summer. It was a great story with great writing, which is the perfect combination. Because, you know, you can't have one with the other. Sometimes it's a great story, but it's not well written. Or if it's great written, but the story. So this author did a great story with great writing. So I love The Peacock Summer and The Book of Lost Names. Those were my last two ones. Now I'm trying to find another good book. I hate being in between good books.
Oh, it's the worst feeling, isn't it?
It's a terrible feeling. I go crazy.
Yeah, and you're always trying to, like, it's kind of funny when I'm between a book, a really good book, it's like I want the same book I was reading before, but I also don't. I don't want to read the same book. I want, like, the same feeling. And finding that feeling again can be challenging sometimes because writing it.
One other book I absolutely loved, I read it about a year ago, was Five Things I Know About Elsie. And it was such a good book. It was by a British writer. But the protagonist was an older woman in a nursing home. Did you read that?
I didn't. It's on my list, though. It sounds
brilliant. Was amazing. It was the best book because usually you don't have a protagonist, an old woman in a nursing home. But I could not put that down. And at the end, despite those five things about Elsa, you just love her. You just love her. And it only comes together right at the end of the book. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just a wonderful read, Five Things You Have to Know About Elsie. Just love that book.
Sounds really good.
It was great.
Do you listen to any music?
Well, when I do in my car, I am a terrible driver, so I try to unitask. But if I've been on the route many times, I still like the 60s music. Like, you know, I still love Joni Mitchell, or I love the Simon and Garfunkel, the Moody Blues, Cat Stevens. I like 60s music.
Oh, yes. I love Cat Stevens.
I love Cat Stevens.
Yeah, I have that on record. So I'm a big vinyl person. So I have a large collection of vinyl. I can see it from my desk right now. So, so yeah, no, that's a beautiful era of music in general. Just so much.
Oh, fun. I love that. Yeah. That was, to me, is like the pinnacle. It was just the best. So that's my music.
Well, that's wonderful. Do you want me to share next, Farah?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to tell you right now, my list is ridiculously long. I mean, ridiculously short.
Oh, I was going to say no.
No, I meant short. I don't know why I mixed up the words. My list is very short this week. I'm on the other end. I do watch a lot of TV. I've slowly, over the years, I go back and forth. I go through like stints. I'll go and I'll watch a lot of TV, and then I will take a break and I won't watch any TV. I'm on a break right now. I didn't watch anything this week. So it was a nothing week, no TV on my list, no movies. I also used to do a lot more board gaming time, but I do have a 4-year-old. So obviously I don't do that quite as often. But wow. I have taken to playing. I just taught her recently how to play Monopoly. So she is really into it, and she beat me and my husband in her first time. And honestly, I really didn't help her that much. Like, I helped her a little, obviously, like tell her what the rent prices were. But she made all of her own decisions, and I think I may have nudged along like one transaction, but I was pretty proud of her. I was like, that's good. You got an eye for it. And I can't wait till she's actually full on beating me without any sort of push in any direction. So this week for me was all about reading one book project titles, like literally just one book project.
Are you trying to beat me?
I'm not gonna beat you. I already have one left. You're so ahead of me. I just checked out another one, but obviously Women Who Launch, I finished that this week. So I wanted to obviously make sure that I learned about these women before I spoke to you, Marlene. So I was really excited about the book and I enjoyed it. And I finished it up on a drive this morning. It was really good. I am halfway through Broadband, the main one book project title. And it is, I wasn't sure if I was going to enjoy it. Like I said, I'm not a nonfiction reader, but I'm really enjoying it. I was really surprised that I'm enjoying it so much. And I feel like I'm learning so much, and I'm really enjoying, I love history. So
I love history.
So, yeah, I can tell you love history from your books. I'm not surprised at all.
Right. If I could interject, because I too love history. And if you like history, I had Behind Every Great Man. And what Behind Every Great Man is, as a history teacher, it just dawned on me once. This just reminded me because you said you like history. It dawned on me, we all know Gandhi, but what about Mrs. Gandhi? We all know Karl Marx, but what about Mrs. Gandhi? We all know Oscar Wilde, but Mrs. Wilde. And so this book, Behind Every Great Man, is the Mrs. Einsteins. And what a story they could tell being married to these larger-than-life alpha males. And it completely changes your viewpoint of these historical people. Like, before I read this, you know, Albert Einstein was the absent-minded, professor at Princeton. But when you read this, what he did to his first wife and how he abandoned his two sons, you have a completely different perspective. That, again, it's the idea of the art or the scientist. As a man, he was one of the greatest minds of, one of the greatest scientific minds who ever lived. But his interpersonal skills, with especially how he treated his wife and two sons, his first wife and two sons, he was a horrible human being. So
that sounds terrible.
This was really interesting because, you know, Karl Marx, you never think of him as a devoted father, but he loved his wife Jenny so much. And they had five daughters and they were all called Jenny. And so you see him as a father and as a husband, not just the foremost economic thinker in history. So I absolutely loved doing the research on Behind Every Great Man, because that was really interesting.
I actually wrote down the title. I'm really interested because, I mean, realistically, when you're looking at people and their contributions mm-hmm. to history, you don't always look at them as full, like, pictures of who they are. Like, it's really surface level. What was their accomplishments? How did they impact the rest of us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. But realistically, but who impacted them?
Exactly. How did they actually get to that point? And how did they, like you said, how do they treat people, for instance? You know, like right. just somebody made a good contribution doesn't mean anything.
Right. Well, what's interesting about Mrs. Einstein, the first Mrs. Einstein, she was from Serbia and she was so brilliant. In Switzerland, there's a Zurich Polytech, which is equivalent to the American, what's that school? The American, where the brains go, I forget the number one's MIT.
Yes.
So that's the equivalent to the MIT. Einstein got in on his third try. His wife got in on her first.
Oh, wow.
So that was an indication how brilliant she was. And when his letters were sealed for 50 years after his death, but they were in the library in Jerusalem. And when they unearthed his letters, he said things like, when he wrote his wife, he said, "When our great theory of relativity," and he used the word "our." So it's interesting. And she matched him for brilliance in his scientific knowledge. So did he, and he said in their divorce, he said, "If I win the Nobel Prize, I'm going to give you the money for the Nobel Prize." And it's because he realized her contribution. So, I mean, it was like, was a woman also responsible for contributing to, you know, the theory of relativity? So it was just really, really interesting story because, and then at the end, he fell in love with his cousin who he married. He took off to America because, you know, he was Jewish, and he left his wife and two sons without any, except for the Nobel Prize, without any money. And he never saw his two sons again. Well, one was a hopeless schizophrenic, and one became a professor at Berkeley. And when they interviewed him about his father, he rarely spoke about his father. And he said, "My father, the only scientific experiment he ever gave up on was me." So it was like, whoa, you know, Einstein, the scientist wasn't the same as Einstein, the husband and the father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a really good point. I mean, that's profound. That is profound. I mean, that leaves me speechless to a degree, just because, like, yeah, I mean, when you look at the whole picture, the whole part of a person, I mean, their contributions can mean a lot, but if they aren't there, and I've come to, I've always appreciated that fact, but I can't believe I'm going to interject this right now. But since I watched Hamilton, I've started thinking about this a lot. So I know, Farrah, I can't help it. I've got to interject. Since I started watching Hamilton, and I've seen it and listened to it a million times, I think about that a lot, just like the whole impact of these people that we hear about so often, and we hear about them very surface level. It is so surface level. It's what did they do for us now, not who were they really, and like the being able to connect ourselves to that through fantastic publications just like yours, for instance, it means a lot. And it means that we're able to also know that as women and as people that we can make accomplishments happen no matter what if we put our minds to it, you know,
and that absolutely
that's possible. I think since you appreciate history, I actually think you might like this broadband title too, Marlene. It's actually really interesting. It's a broadband, the untold story of the women who made the internet.
Interesting.
It's,
yeah.
It's really interesting. It's like I said, I'm about half, it's an 8-hour listen. I'm 4 hours into it. And one of the things I'd never thought about was that the word computer comes from the word, it's computer was like a job for a woman. So they computed information. And I was like, oh my God, I never thought about
it. I never knew that. Never knew that. Who knew?
I didn't. I was so
surprised
at that. So yeah, that's, I definitely have been enjoying it. I've been learning so much, and I've been learning how, you know, often a lot of times in historical elements, you know, society, and I feel like this is changing, obviously, just like our community read, but a lot of times, you know, women have been historically brushed under the rug when really they've been major contributors, major.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just not talked about as much, and it's really nice to be coming to a point where it is more widely accepted and known, and it just needs to become, you know, common knowledge now of these people.
Right.
So I'm very excited about that. That's been a really great book. I'm enjoying it. So both One Book Project reads this week, and literally that's my whole list, Farah.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What about watching or listening to?
Nothing. I haven't been watching anything. That's all I've been reading is One Book Project titles. And then listening to, I've been listening to the Hamilton soundtrack still. But that's not exciting or new because I've been listening to that for like 2.5 months. So, you're welcome to give me your long list because I know it's long.
No, it's actually not.
No?
To be honest with you, no. So we're actually, I've just been trying to get ready for everyone, the public coming back into library for express services. So I've been kind of busy with that, but like I finished a couple books. So I finished, obviously Women Who Launch, which I really liked. And I finished, the Be Witch one I was listening to for the YA book cafe that we have here at Beale, which is our book club for the, young adults. I started, the bookshop of yesterday, and that one is is for the Cozy Reads Book Cafe, which is our Cozy Reads book club here at the library. And I also started a Map to the Sun, which is a graphic novel. It's thick. It's this is what it looks like. But the pictures are, it's like the pictures are like color coded. So each person's like point of view, each person's chapter is a point of view, but it's like a different color. And then when they start, like when they start getting into like where the chapters are like, or the point of views are like correlating, it jumps back and forth. The colors jump back and forth.
Unique.
That is neat. That's a neat, I have in my mind Shelley's interview from last week about editing and that decision now.
Yeah. So it's really nice. It's about this main girl, Ren, who plays basketball, and she has this friend, Luna, who they were really, really close, and then Luna moved away because her mother passed away in Hawaii. So Luna moved back to Hawaii. And so she stayed there for a while and didn't like call Ren back or nothing. And then all of a sudden Luna shows up again in like the middle when they're like in high school. And she tries to act like close with Ren again. And Ren's like, no, I can't do this. Like, you're just going to leave again. So what's the point? And Ren really like looked forward to Luna and spending time with her because Ren's, kind of her mom isn't there and her dad is always working and she has a sister who is just like a runaway junkie kind of, you know?
Yeah.
So she's always like, and her sister's like always trying to look for a handout and she comes back into their lives and then like basically just like pulls everybody uphill and then just like slams them back down. And so she deals a lot with that. And the story progresses to Ren's like current friends and bullies. And they're just playing ball one day and they decide to start like a teacher comes through and wants to start like a female basketball team and stuff like that. So it's kind of going up and down their emotions and stuff. And they're all in high school. So that's what I'm reading right now. And I'm also the cozy one, which is the bookshop of yesterday. That it's not my normal read, but it's kind of interesting. It's about this girl who spends time a lot of time with her uncle when she's really young, and then one day her uncle and her mom get into a fight and she never sees her uncle again. She always wonders about him, but like,
I read it. I remember that book. I just
okay.
Yeah, I remember that was a good book. That was intriguing.
Yeah, it's like, it's got like a little bit of mystery in there so far, because her uncle leaves her. So now that he's passed away, he's left her this bookshop, and she has like no idea why he's left it to her. And she had no idea about like his life, like that he was married or how he got the bookshop. And he leaves her like a series of riddles, because I guess they used to do riddles when they were younger. So he leaves her a series of riddles. And like, what I think is like really interesting, and I don't know if I'm predicting the story in my head, but I just feel like it's really weird that he spends a lot more time with her than her sister, because she has a younger sister, but he spends a lot more time with her than he does with her sister.
It'll explain why later.
Okay. Yeah, because I was just like, wait, why is this happening? Like, why isn't the sister, like, because, like, for me, you know, when me and my sisters, if my aunt or uncle, like, took us out, it was, like, all, you know, equal. You know what I mean? Like, oh, she gets the ice cream and she gets the ice cream. And it wasn't just like, okay, we're only taking her to the park. It's like, we're taking all of them to the park. You know what I mean?
So, the mystery will become clear.
Okay, cool. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. And I'm like intrigued, but it's not like my normal read, because everybody knows, like, you know, that I love reading like YA. So this is a different read for me. And if I like it, I mean, I'm open to reading more cozy reads.
More cozy reads. I love the title of that book
club. Yeah. And then as far as watching, we watched an older Indian movie at our house. It's called Swadesh, which the translation I think is basically like people of a country. So it's basically about this guy who works for NASA, and he has it in his mind. He lives in America, and he goes back to India because he wants to meet the nanny that took care of him while, you know, he was younger. And when his parents passed away, instead of like taking care of the nanny, they sent her to a retirement home. So he feels really guilty about that, because kind of like in the Indian culture, it's like we don't send people to retirement homes, right? Yeah. Like, they live with us forever and ever. And so he feels like really guilty about that. And so we ended up watching that one. And so he goes back and he tries to find her, and he finds her. And it turns out that his one of the girls that he used to play with in childhood, she's actually living with the nanny's living with them now. And so there's like this little romance thing in there, and he finds out like what happened to her after she got sent to the retirement home. And basically she lives in this small little village, and electricity isn't like they have electricity, but it's like it's only for a few hours a day. And so I think he kind of looks at making improvements for their for the little village and things like that, because like there's like no bank in the village. There's like they have like a postmaster and they have like mail, but there's like no internet. So there's like this one scene where the guy's like talking on the phone. So he's calling, his cell phone doesn't work there, so he's calling America, and from the post office, because that's also where you can make like long distance calls. And the phone call cost him 540 rupees to call America for like not even a certain amount of, I would probably say the whole conversation like lasted like less than 10 minutes, and it cost him like 500 rupees.
That's a lot.
And yeah. And so he was just like, and so he talks about like, man, I wish we had email. So the guy's like, wait, what's email? So he tells him about like the internet and all this stuff. And it's a little bit of an older movie. It came out in 2004, but it's like, so it's still like current event, because stuff like that still happens. I mean, I know like right now in India, probably everybody has like smartphones and things like that and the internet, but like a lot of places don't have Wi-Fi, and it's still pay per use and all that stuff. So
yeah, well, there's a lot of rural areas still.
Yeah,
so, I mean, like, yeah, totally, that makes a lot of sense, and it probably is still very relevant in some areas. So sounds like an interesting film.
Yeah, so we watched that, and then guys, okay, get ready for this. I started watching Star Wars. So we, me and my husband are an hour into the first movie.
Okay, which first movie?
We started with the how they were released. So number four.
Okay, so okay, release. You're doing release order. Okay.
Yeah. Should we have gone the other way? I don't know.
There's different viewpoints on it. I'm personally a proponent of storyline order, because mm-hmm. I think that it's a little easier for people who have not been a part of the Star Wars universe to understand.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, there's also something to appreciate about the release date order, because that's, you think about how it affected pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I just think that there are different ways of looking at it. I would just say that, you know, like, when I think about the original trilogy, you know, it was life-changing technology-wise for mm-hmm. film, you know. I it's not my favorite portion of the series or anything like that, but a lot of people, they have a strong appreciation or strong love, and they are super into those films. And then, you know, you can see that, especially when you get into the prequel films, it's mm-hmm. definitely like they got very in awe of CGI. Mm-hmm. To the point that it took away from the story, but you should still watch them because it tells you the story, but it still don't rely on those. I think the newest films are fantastic, but I got lots of Star Wars lovers who absolutely hate them too. So it's a ride. At least you'll see what people are talking about, and at least you'll know what they're talking about, at least.
Yeah. So we've been watching that, and like, he really enjoys it. He said, because he was like, okay, I'm tired, let's go to bed. So I was like, okay. I was like, well, I want to kind of watch it. And he was like, please don't watch it without me.
Aww.
I was like, that's okay. Sweet. How can you say no, right? So we've been doing that. We're only an hour in, but we've got like
18, 22 hours or something like that to finish it. So
yeah, we've had a busy week. So maybe over the weekend we'll watch, kind of finish it up. I just didn't realize that it was as long as like an Indian movie. So,
oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was going to be that long, but which is fine because we're used to the length anyway, I think, but it was just, we had started it late. Like, we had started at like 10:30.
Well, I can't wait until you get to my personal favorite, because my personal favorite is Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
So Rogue One, I personally believe that Rogue One is the best film of the entire franchise. Like,
okay.
It's fantastic. It's actually really cool because it connects the old films with the newer films, which I think that's like, it's an in-between, and the stakes are very high in it. And I think that they just managed to like cross all the wires correctly with like storyline effects, etc. So can't wait till you get there. But yeah, I'm glad you're starting. So
and then listening wise, just catching up on the Very Presidential podcast with Ashley Flower.
Oh, I still want to listen to that. I really want to listen to that.
It's good. It's good. This is an unrelated topic, but there's a book coming out that all the staff members at the library that I've hooked on the Very Presidential podcast, or I guess I should say one of our other supervisors hooked up. I don't know. I think I started listening to it at the same time. But anyways, there's a book coming out too that has kind of some... So it's about like presidents and like the different like affairs and love lives and all that fun stuff.
all the drama, basically. I think that we probably should talk about Indoor Express Services real quickly.
Oh yeah.
That started today. So Indoor Express Services, we are now with, ready to receive people inside by appointment. So anybody that's interested in either browsing or needs access to public computers or faxing or printing or research services, anything like that, or needs to speak to somebody about their account, we are accepting appointments. You can actually call on the phone at 661-868-0701. So call the phone and make an appointment. We're doing 30-minute appointments, and we've actually, as of today, expanded our opening of our branches for the express services from 7 branches to 12 branches. So if you guys need to get inside of our doors, we are now ready for that. And we encourage you to come in. Just something to keep in mind is everybody needs to be wearing masks, you know, acknowledge 6-foot distance. All those parameters are on our website. You can also request an appointment on our website. So go ahead and let us know if you are interested in receiving our services or you need to call and make an appointment. Now, if you are like me, and I'm totally one of these people, if you're not comfortable coming inside, you do not have to. You can utilize curbside services. You are more than welcome to. We are continuing it. They are not closing down just because we started up express services. So if you like curbside services, feel free to continue using it. You can get grab bags. You can pick up holds. You can request titles. Whatever you need, we're still giving out craft kits. We're still offering lunch at the library at our Beale Memorial Library. So that is still happening. And for those branches that are opening up for express services in the next few days and whatnot, they are also going to have curbside services too. So even though they didn't have curbside services before, they now have it too. So now in Bakersfield, there is actually 3 branches, and that's Rathbun, Southwest, and Beale. So go to our website. It's a lot of information to cover in this very short segment. But go ahead and go to our website or call us on the phone and we will help you through that. So we are really happy to see you guys and say hi. So that's my spiel. So anything else you want to add, Farrah?
No, just that if you come in or if you do curbside, you'll be seeing me. I'll be there like I always am. So it'll be fun. And if you listen to the podcast or watch it, let us know and wave at us. And we love seeing everybody. So make sure you guys come in and get your books.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Marlene, for being on the show today. We really enjoyed
it. Thank you so much to both of you. I really appreciated virtually meeting you and talking to you. You're both so lovely.
Thank you very much.
And maybe one day we'll meet in person.
One day. Definitely. You're always welcome. We're always welcome to see each other. And yeah, we really enjoy it. I really, really love seeing in the minds of the people who write books. And I'm on Farrah's whole wavelength with the fangirling thing. I feel like
I knew you'd get there.
I got there. I was quiet at first, but now I'm like, this is so cool. And I'm so happy. You know, when you think about the negatives of 2020, one of the positives for me has been all the cool virtual opportunities and being like really getting these opportunities to connect with people that normally we were like, no, the physical barriers make it not possible. But now we've been shown that that is not true.
Right. If you have an internet and a computer, you know, it's irrelevancy where you are.
Exactly.
And also, you know, you can bring different people together. So technology's grand in a way.
Exactly. So definitely been a lot of fun. And we hope that everybody gets involved with the One Book Project and reads Marlene's book because it was so good. So
yes, thank you. Please read it. It was super good.
Thank you so much, ladies. I really appreciate it.
All right.
Well, bye, guys.
Bye, everybody. See you next time.
Bye, guys.
Time.